scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get it going. It is a Friday, April 4th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully you've had a great week so far. Welcome to our Groundworks Downtown studio. We're available this hour on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, Vix?
Oh, not much. Just hanging out. Having a time.
Having a time, indeed. The text line's open at 960-960. If you want to jump in on this hour of the program, you're always welcome. We'd love to have you. And 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from right now, will be our first show, our first Flames Talk after the regular season. We are now 13 days away from the final game of the regular season, which goes April 17th on the road at Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles. And so the two-week clock has begun. The two-week countdown has started. And I thought we'd kick off the hour by maybe doing a little rapid fire on what we're watching for now in the final 2 weeks of the regular season. Thanks for being with us. And will Calgary's seven remaining games, will all seven of them be meaningful, or will they be eliminated before the seven games come to an end? We'll find all that out in the next 13 days or so. And so as the two-week countdown begins, yeah, you and I came up with some things that, we'll be watching for and things that we'll be tracking over the next seven games and over the next 2 weeks. And I think the number one thing now is there's no doubt about it. Like, you could have made what I think was, you know, probably a flimsy argument that St. Louis was the team to catch going into Thursday night. But coming out of Thursday, even though the Blues have lost Dylan Holloway week to week, likely will be losing Dylan Holloway for the rest of the regular season. With 11 straight wins, I think the Blues are uncatchable at this point. I think the Blues are going to the playoffs. So that leaves the Flames with one team to track down. The good news is, it's mano a mano. There's nobody between them and the Minnesota Wild. That's the good news. The bad news is there is still a significant gap to make up. They are 5 points back with a game in hand as we talk right now. When Friday night is over, they'll be 5, 6, or 7 points back with two games in hand. And the caveat remains that specifically on Minnesota, even more so than on St. Louis, the Flames can't tie. They will have to be 1 point better than the Minnesota Wild, almost guaranteed. But they're the team to chase. Are we all on board with that? And is that kind of the consensus that you've picked up on? Like, if there's any team to track down, it's the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis winning 11 straight, only two regulation losses coming out of the Four Nations. Like, I don't see it, even if they stumble and lose each of their remaining five games. I'm not suggesting that they're necessarily home and cooled, but it's time to take the focus off the St. Louis Blues. You got two games in hand. Even if you cash them in, you're still three back. Having said that, that means you've only got five games remaining as well to make up that ground. You don't have any head-to-heads against them. Officially isn't necessarily the right word, but from my perspective, we can officially close the door on taking a look at the St. Louis Blues and trying to calculate, well, if the Flames went 7-0-0 and the Blues went X, no, it's done. They're safe.
Yeah, I think the Blues are making the playoffs. The question is, are the Wild making the playoffs? And Minnesota remains fully in control of their destiny here on April 4th. The elimination number to Minnesota, as we're talking, now Minnesota does play Friday night on the road against the New York Islanders, but the elimination number, as we're speaking right now, is 4.5 games or 9 points. Any points gained by Minnesota or lost by the Flames over the next 2 weeks, equaling 9, will guarantee the Flames will not be able to track down Minnesota. The elimination number on St. Louis is 3.5 games or 7 points. How do we feel about the Flames tracking down the Minnesota Wild? Minnesota, 6 games to go, including Friday night. Calgary, 7 games to go, and they're back in action Saturday at home to the Vegas Golden Knights.
I mean, it's still very, very uphill, and I can get the sense from the optimism side where, okay, you're 5 back, you have a game at hand, you cash that in, you're 3 back, you have a head-to-head, you cash that in mm-hmm. regulation, you're 1 back. But a lot of stuff still has to happen between now and then. And to be perfectly honest, the Flames play 3 games before that matchup against Minnesota. Minnesota plays 3 games before that match against Calgary. So it doesn't quite work out the way I'm detailing it. But in a sense, there is a way to close that gap to 1. But we're still talking about, and I'm sure you have it, and you can hammer through them, but Money Puck has the Flames at 12.7. Prior to the win against Anaheim, it was 10.3.
Yes, they we're not seeing
massive jumps at this time of the season because there just isn't enough runway for it to spike to 20, 25, 33%. That's just the nature of the situation. So is it feasible? Is it possible? Yeah, you cash in your game at hand. You beat them head-to-head. You're within 1. But that's not the order of operations of how this is going to unfold.
Here are the latest playoff odds of the two sites. Money Puck, St. Louis, 95.8%. Minnesota, 89.9%. So they dropped slightly. St. Louis with an 11th straight win. They went up. St. Louis, it was a little bit different. St. Louis was up 4-2 in the third. And they almost toe-picked it away. But they got a power play in overtime and ended up winning it on Robert Thomas's game winner. So they're up to 95.8% with an 11th straight win. Minnesota is really grinding here. They're trying their best to get points, all that type of stuff. They don't have Kaprizov. They don't have Eriksson Ek, although those guys are close. Minnesota, 89.9% to make the playoffs. Calgary up to 12.7%. Vancouver down to 1.6%. That is over at Money Puck. And at Hockey Reference, they have got right now St. Louis, 95.7%. Minnesota, 91.3%. Calgary, 11.6%. Vancouver, 1.4%. If you're the Flames, never tell me the odds. They remain Han Solo, but the uphill climb is real, and the difficulty of closing down a 6-point gap on anybody in a 7-game stretch, not an easy task. That being said, not impossible, and if you're the Flames, your belief level remains high. If you're the Flames, you have everything still to play for. And with what they did against Anaheim, took care of business. Played a really solid 60 minutes against the Ducks. Full marks for 2 points. And now you got to go do that against a much more difficult team against Vegas. But all you can do is put another really solid effort on the table. And maybe it's good enough to beat the Golden Knights on that night. Maybe it's not. You know, Vegas will be ornery. They've lost a couple in a row. They did not like the way things went against Winnipeg on Thursday night. So you figure Vegas will be pretty motivated coming in here because they've got LA nipping on their heels.
Exactly, for the Pacific
top spot. So I don't think Vegas will be a pushover. That being said, put a good effort on the ice if you're the Flames. See where the chips fall and see if you can get another good 2 points. And you can't control what Minnesota does here down the stretch. Minnesota will do what they do. They've got a San Jose left. They've got an Anaheim left. They've also got a
Vancouver.
They got a Vancouver left. They've got a Dallas on their schedule. So, I mean, Minnesota will do what they do. And maybe it'll be enough. And what the Flames do doesn't matter. And maybe it won't. But if you're the Flames, all you can do is 2 things. Keep taking care of your business. And if you take care of your business in a positive way, maybe it puts a little more pressure on Minnesota. And maybe that pressure has a little bit of a seed of doubt creep into the Wild in the driver's seat right now.
Well, and listening to the players in the locker room, they know that they have to go on a massive run to make this even a remote possibility. But they also understand it's the old elephant metaphor, one bite at a time, because you can't look at your schedule and go, oh, we need to go 7-1-0, or we need to go on an 8-game winning streak. They take care of Anaheim, get that out of the way. But that's how it is. It's a singular focus. It was Anaheim Thursday night. It's Vegas Saturday night. Once you get past Vegas, it'll be San Jose on Monday night, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And yes, you're absolutely glued to the out-of-town schedule to see what Minnesota does. And if Minnesota happens to stumble a little bit on Friday night against the New York Islanders, maybe that's a little extra jump. Maybe that's a little extra juice going into Vegas. But the fact of the matter remains, we're still talking about a 1 in 9.5 chance that they can pull this out, that Minnesota falters to a point and Calgary doesn't. where they can succeed. But we're still talking about Minnesota has 10 points in the last 10 games. Flames have 13. That pacing doesn't get you into the playoffs. No. You don't have enough runway. Your schedule isn't long enough. There aren't too many games left for you to play at that pace, even if Minnesota sort of just limps their way along.
How many Dustin Wolf starts in these final seven games? And that is fascinating to me. That's the next thing that I'll be watching. Obviously, Minnesota is the team that the Flames will have to be zeroed on. So in their final seven games, Dustin Wolf got the start against Anaheim. I would assume Dustin Wolf gets the start against Vegas. We shall see, but that would be my assumption here on this Friday afternoon. They've got seven games left, and right now all seven of those games are meaningful. And maybe all seven remain meaningful. That would obviously be what the Flames are hoping for. If they do, if all seven remain meaningful, is that seven more Dustin Wolf starts down the stretch here? Like, is this, whether we think that is the way it should go, are we talking about a Flames team ready to just ride number 32 here and see if he can be the difference in them making or missing the playoffs?
Here's how I look at it. This one's going to be a general. I think most people look at it this way. He's the most important player both this season and for the future for the Flames, as it stands right now, what they have. So I am curious to see how he's deployed the rest of the way. If this is game seven of the playoffs, Dustin Wolf starts. Flames have seven games remaining. Each of them is not, it's not must win, but you're in must win territory.
That's their mindset, right?
So if you've got seven games remaining and you have to win them all, that's seven game sevens. Now, I don't necessarily think you can roll out Dustin Wolf for all seven. Yes, you play every second day. You don't have any back-to-backs. The schedule sets up where you play every second day from now till the end of the regular season. But I do think you need to sneak in a rest for him somewhere along the way. I don't know where that is. But I Vegas on Saturday must win. To me, that's a Dustin Wolf start. Next Friday against Minnesota, depending on what happens, that's a must-win start. So as long as these remain important and relevant to making the playoffs.
But so does San Jose and Anaheim on the road are all must-win starts too, right?
But I'm saying you're like in theory, you take care of those because you have to. That's not negotiable. You can't go into San Jose on Monday or into Anaheim next Wednesday and lose either of those games. Non-negotiable. So that makes Vegas on Saturday and Minnesota next Friday also absolute must wins. Mm-hmm. They're all absolute must wins, but
because they are all must wins, like, does the coaching staff go away from Wolf here? Wolf has been their meal ticket. Wolf has won their confidence and turned himself into this team's number one goalie. Does this coaching staff go away from the guy that they are most comfortable with seven game sevens between now and the end of the regular season, or what they'd like to be seven game sevens? And all you can do is stay in the fight. If they don't win against Vegas, well, all of a sudden you're like, okay, well now it gets really dire. They win against Vegas, regardless of what Minnesota does, they stay in the fight. And so if all you're trying to do is get to the next meaningful game, is it not a one-game mentality, and thus is it not Wolf that they're going to go with? I as much as I was pushing for Vladar to start against Anaheim, and I would have done that, the fact that they went to Wolf, I guess what I'd say is it wouldn't surprise me if 32 got all the starts the rest of the way here, at least until there is a determination.
And I absolutely get that logic, and that's how I preface the conversation, is all of these are must-win, all of these are game sevens, but I think from a durability standpoint, from a freshness standpoint, you've got to get a Dan Vladar start in there somewhere to make sure that your number one goalie is as close to 100% as he can in terms of the energy reserves, whether that's Monday in San Jose, maybe not, next Wednesday in Anaheim, perhaps get him teed up. But then again, how much rest do you want him to have before he plays that all-important game against Minnesota? The other thing that helps this conversation a little bit is in Dan Vladar's last seven starts, eight appearances, .921 save percentage and .212 goals against. So it's not like we're talking about earlier season Vladar, who had an .885 save percentage, and you're sitting there going, oh, we just don't have the option to rest Dustin Wolf. Vladar has given you enough over the course of the last month and a half, 2 months, where you can have the confidence in saying, if we want to give our number one a break to top him up, the other option has a 921 save percentage over the course of his last 453 minutes of action. That's like, if you didn't have any option behind Wolf, seven straight for Wolf. But you do have the luxury of a guy that is playing his best hockey of the season behind him. So if you need to spell off Wolf for 60 minutes of action to rest him up, to make sure that he can give you as close to 100% in the other six starts, you kind of have to do that from my perspective.
Yeah. I honestly don't know. Like, you're being very logical, and I agree with your logic.
But I agree with yours, too.
I don't
too.
Know. And I think if I were making the decisions, I'd be where you are, too. I just am trying to put myself in Ryan Huska's shoes or Jason LaBarbera's shoes or this coaching staff. You know, whether we tell you that this website or that website has them in, you know, low double digits to make the playoffs, they 100% believe, like, that in their mind, they're 100% going to the playoffs.
Yep.
And they need to win all their games to get there. And so to do that, they got to win the next one. And to keep themselves in the fight and to keep themselves in reach of reeling in Minnesota, they've got to win Saturday. So it just feels like they go to Wolf. And I wonder if now this, like, if this was Jacob Markstrom, would we be having this conversation? It would be 25 the entire way, wouldn't it? Like, in terms of what Ryan Huska or Daryl Sutter or whoever the coach
was. Well,
might
if think. It was Daryl Sutter, it's Markstrom all the way.
Very true. But I think it would have been with Ryan Huska as well. If they were in this exact same situation a year ago when Markstrom was still here and they had seven games to go and Jacob was their meal ticket, I think they would be riding him and starting him. And again, I'm not even saying that's the best way to go about it. I just am trying to put myself in a coach's brain in terms of which way they might go.
I still feel like what if it was Daryl? What if it was Ryan Huska? I'm trying to think maybe this is the worst approach you can take to it. What would head coach Aaron Vickers do? I have never been a head coach anywhere. Might have been a head coach for a beer league tournament somewhere in Banff once along the way where you can kind of like slant. You don't even have to fully stand up behind the bench because you're probably nursing something from the night before. I still feel like you find a one spot for Vladar just to make sure that you can get optimal Wolf. Now, I don't know where that is because, again, I don't think it's against Vegas on Saturday. Dustin Wolf is 11-1-0 against California teams in his NHL career. So is it San Jose or Anaheim on the road? I'm not certain. Certainly not Minnesota. Because, again, we all agree Dustin Wolf's your number one. Minnesota next Friday is as game seven as it gets. Dustin Wolf's theirs. And now you're only three remaining.
What if they lose one of the next three then or two of the next three?
Well,
then
it's not. Well, then we're talking about a different story. I'm saying if you're still in the fight because you're not starting Dustin
Wolf.
See,
but what I'm saying
is the fight.
They don't care about Minnesota right now. They care about Vegas.
You got to get to Minnesota first. Yeah. I understand that. But I'm trying to lay out, okay, what happens? Where would you get Wolf some rest if your plan goes accordingly?
Right.
Because then that means you beat Vegas, you beat San Jose, you beat Anaheim, and you have that Showtime matchup against Minnesota. Are you going with Wolf for a fifth straight start there? Six, I guess, when you go back to Utah? Where is his energy reserves? They've got all the data on that. They've got all the analytics on like where they think his percentage of...
I think they should probably get a Vladar start or two in while the games are still
meaningful. The problem is you put Vladar in and you lose. Oh.
You're going to get second guessed, right?
Yeah. Well, you'll get second guessed before that game even happens.
I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't surprise me if they go Wolf while the games are still meaningful. And I'm not saying that's what I would do. It just wouldn't surprise me if that's what they do. And you know, we'll wait and see. And I don't think it's right or wrong necessarily. I'm just really curious to see how that plays itself out. Okay, two more. Could we see Connor Zeri back before the end of the season? Saw him walking around the dome on Friday, and he looks fine. Like, you know, he wasn't on skates. He wasn't practicing with the team, but he looked to be walking around rather normally. So, and I know that door has been left open the entire way. Could we see Connor Zeri back? If the games remain meaningful and we're into the final few games of the season, I think there is an opportunity. The answer is yes. If they are eliminated, I don't think they risk it. But if they still have games to play and they still mean something, wouldn't be a shocker if, you know, game 80, game 81, game 82, maybe we do see Connor Zeri suit back up. Be a big
it would be a massive return for the Flames. And if he can pass all the medical clearances that's required, I would put him back in the lineup. Absolutely. He's one of their most dynamic forwards. There's no doubt about that. He has been all season long. And I've said it before, but I don't think his point totals necessarily reflect the talent, the skill, even what we've seen on the ice. There just hasn't been a lot of finish there, but there's certainly a high level of skill that comes along with the Connor Zeri. So if the games are meaningful and you are not risking any long-term damage to him, absolutely. And then the question becomes who comes out. I think probably the more obvious choice might be Sharon Govichet. He's played, over the course of the next
last
few days.
Let's see who's available when he comes back, right?
Let's also see who's available when he comes back. That is a dangerous game to be playing.
He's not coming in, rather, on Saturday night, so who knows what happens between now and if that even comes to pass, right?
And that's fair, but I agree. If you're out of it by the time he's ready to come back, you just give him that extra time to recover.
Could we see Zane Parekh? That is, I think, maybe the sexiest question of all, and it's maybe where we'll wrap things up. Could we see Zane Parekh? Now, Zane Parekh's season is still going in the Ontario League, and I know there's just like this assumption that they'll be done on Saturday, but who knows? They're going back home. They're down 3-1 to Erie, and
they are the defending OHL and Memorial Cup champs.
They have also given up a lot of goals. There's one game where they've allowed less than 8.
I actually just went back and watched that season opening 9-5 loss.
You mean series opening?
Series opening, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't sure if you meant like regular season opening.
No, playoff series opening. I was actually doing some 2025 draft scouting, so had to go back and watch that game. What a track meet.
Yeah. And Parekh's been great by all accounts, but Saginaw has struggled to keep the puck out of their net. So they're down 3-1. Number one, Flames aren't even thinking about it until Parekh's season is done. They don't want this to turn into a distraction for him. They want Saginaw to win. And the Flames want Parekh to go as deep in the OHL playoffs as Saginaw goes. And so they're hoping Saginaw wins on Saturday and extends this to game 6. If that doesn't happen, however, here's kind of where I think the situation is on Parekh. I've checked in on this a couple of times over the last couple of days. So I think this is the best way of phrasing it. A, I don't think it's a guarantee that he gets in right away at all. I think that there's a lot of discussion that will happen. I think that the Flames will have everything on the table and they're not going to write anything off. And I think that they've got an open mind on the situation, but until this team is out of it, either essentially or officially, head coach Ryan Huska has got the lineup. And so he's going to be like, management isn't going to, Craig Conroy's not going to be like, hey, let's get some young guys in until their fate is determined. And that's the way it should be. That's the way, like, this is a team that is trying to get into the playoffs. This is not the time for anybody to start meddling with the lineup. Meddling is not even the right way, but a right word. But now's not the time for all of a sudden, actually, we're going to do things a couple different ways. We're going to do things differently now because we want to look at this and this. It's like, no, Craig Conroy's hands off. Like, Husk, this is your lineup, and you put the lineup in that you think is going to give us the best chance to get into the playoffs each and every night and to win the game in front of you. And so here's what I believe will happen. If Parekh is done in the Ontario League on Saturday or next week, 100% he'll join the Flames. I think he'll join them. He'll skate with them. They'll have the option to put him in the American League, and I think that could happen even once the NHL season is done. But they got to get him into practices. They got to get him around the team, and then Ryan Huska has to evaluate. And so I think Ryan Huska will have an open mind on it, but it'll come down to him making the decision as to whether or not he feels comfortable putting Parekh in if a game still means something. And I think that's the way it should be. I think it would be kind of an unfair spot to put him in. Like, imagine if his first game that he's ready for is Friday against Minnesota and you need to win that game. Like, that's a tough spot for a coach to be in. It's not as simple as, well, just put the kid in. It's not that simple when you're trying to win a game and maybe keep your playoff hopes alive. So, if they're out, Parekh will get in 100%.
Yes, I agree.
Zane Parekh will have every opportunity to make this team full-time next year as well. But if the games are still meaningful, I think it's a whole lot more up in the air and anything but a guarantee that he gets in. That'll be a coach's decision. And I think you can understand if the decision was we're not comfortable putting a guy with zero NHL games in at the age of very young 19.
Like Cale 19 McCarr, in February.
Cale McCarr was 20 when he came into the playoffs. Like, we're talking about a year's difference, which
well, at this Cale McCarr was used to playing 22, 23, 24-year-olds. Zamperex only played at max a 20-year-old.
And it just it is a different situation when McCarr came in six years ago and was a little bit of an older 20-year-old as well. Like, Zane Parekh just turned 19 a couple months ago. So I guess... Like and Cale McCarr's an October birthday, so he was kind of like 20 and a half, closer to 21 than he was to 20, or close to being closer to 21. I just, by no means is it a guarantee that Parekh gets in. They're going to bring him here if his season's done, and they're going to have him in practice, and they're going to evaluate, and they're going to keep an open mind, and everything will be on the table. But I just, I don't. I guess what I'm saying is, like, don't be losing your mind if he's done on Saturday and isn't playing Monday in San Jose. Because could it happen? Sure. I don't think anything's off the table, but I do think that this is a scenario where this is going to be a coaching decision. And if Ryan Huska doesn't feel comfortable putting him in for a do or die game, then he won't.
Well, when your season could literally, this isn't hyperbole, could literally hinge on a bad turnover. And you're done. That is a tough spot to put a 19-year-old in with zero NHL experience, who's coming out of the OHL playoffs, used to playing 40 minutes a night, seeing maybe 12 minutes in a third pairing situation, maybe some power play time. Who knows? That is a lot to put on a guy that has absolutely 0 minutes in the NHL. No evaluation tool, no body of work for even the player to be able to gauge risk management. Doesn't know the pace.
You got to get into a
doesn't
few,
know the timing.
You got to get into a few practices at the very, very least. Like, and how, then if he blows the doors off in practice, maybe that ups the comfort level for the coaching staff. Like, oh, you know what? Yeah, damn right. We got to get this guy in. But like, to immediately,
this isn't isn't a trial and error situation. You can't learn. You can't evaluate on the fly. Going, can I make this pinch? Do I have time? Do I not have time? When you've never played at that pacing before in your life, and to do it in what we've just literally described as seven game sevens, that's a bold spot to put him in.
Idar Suniev, William Stromgren, Jan Kuznetsov, a few others. Again, if they're out of it, I think that you'll see a little bit of a mass airlift. Now, I know they only will have two recalls, but when you're out of it, the NHL doesn't really care. You can call things.
The guy's
emergency.
Got the sniffles.
Yeah, and the NHL only has that rule in place for teams that are fighting to make the playoffs or trying to win a division. Like, they have that four recall rule in place so that teams don't start to circumvent the cap, trying to get guys in and carry more guys. If you're out of it, like if the Flames were to be eliminated, they're fine if you say, you know what, Michael Backlund's toe hurts and Mackenzie Weegar,
how many guys have we seen not take morning skates or participate in practices?
They're
so
fine
on and so
calling
forth.
Things emergency recalls. So
it's not going to be an issue.
Read some text for you at 960-960 on all of what we have just discussed. This says, we live in a weird world right now. If tariffs can be declared on Seals and Penguins, then the Flames can make the playoffs. Nothing makes sense right now, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Wild lose five, go Flames, go. Mike says, if Calgary wins the next three and the Wild lose the next three, they'd be in a playoff spot going into that match, correct? Yeah, that would be correct if it was a three-game skid and a three-game heater. This says, doesn't look like the Flames are going to make the playoffs at this point, but either way, they should absolutely get Parekh into the lineup as soon as Saginaw's season ends this Saturday. Seems a little rude to just call it that they're done on Saturday. I don't think Zane Parekh has any interest in being done on Saturday.
No.
The way he's played in this series. This says, I'd be starting Vladar against the Knights. Wolf has struggled against top teams, especially in big games. And Kyle in Tuscany says, if Parekh gets into a game, does it burn a year of his ELC? No, not until he plays 10. So if he plays, say that he got in game 80-80, and played three games, then it wouldn't burn. Say that he got in game 80, and then they made the playoffs, and they go to round two, well, then most likely he, because playoff games count too.
I was going to put you on the spot with that question.
Yeah, they count as well on the 10 games.
Channeling your inner Pike.
Doing my best. I learned that in 2015 with Sam Bennett.
Oh.
Yeah, I learned that one, that playoff games do count. So text line's always open, 960-960. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now a Friday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. It is Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Friday Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, another impactful game from Adam Klapka Thursday night against the Anaheim Ducks. Picks up an assist on another fourth line goal. That line, Klapka, Lomberg, Rooney, continues to, over the last three, four games, make a real positive impact on this team. And it was Logan Gordon who kind of brought this up to me while we were watching the game in the press box on Thursday night. And basically, Logo was like, man, I mean, another impact night for Klapka. When's the right time to think about moving him up the depth chart? And it doesn't have to be this season. I'm just curious, like, when is the right time, and when are you starting to think about seeing Klapka play elevated minutes outside of the fourth line, guys?
Well, I'm okay with him playing elevated minutes right now, but not full time. So I like how Ryan Huska has handled not only Adam Klapka, but really his entire roster. When guys are gone, he will reward them with more ice time. And if guys aren't, then he will take away their ice time or their special teams time. But, you know, Adam Klapka is a guy who has certainly proven at the AHL level that he is a top six player. And I think he could turn into a top six guy in the NHL. I don't think that he's that right now, at least not on a regular basis. But, you know, for example, the other night we saw Yegor Sharangovich struggling a little bit, or at least that line struggling a little bit. So, you know, Adam Klapka gets promoted to the top line with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil. And, you know, he's got the size at 6'8", 235. He's got the speed. He's got the skill to certainly play higher in the lineup than he has to this point in his NHL career. But I like how Ryan Huska has handled him. Don't put too much on his plate. If he's going, reward him. Give him more ice time. Give him more responsibility. I could even see him being a regular contributor on maybe the second power play moving forward with that, again, size and skill. You have him as your net front guy, and he's going to be a tough guy to move. But right now, I think that they're using him the right way. He's been really impactful playing on the right side of the fourth line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg. So I would leave him there for the most part, but in situations, I wouldn't hesitate him to move him up the lineup.
Yeah, I like the idea and the usage that Ryan Huska has had for him, where it's bumping him up with Nazem Kadri. I would, like you, Willsy, I would love to see him at the net front on PP2 just as a little taster or a sample to see if that's something that could be a full-time role for him next season. But right now, I let that fourth line cook. Lomberg, Rooney, Klapka, that's as effective, I think, as we've seen the fourth line be over the course of the last month or so, as we've seen basically all season, or at least since Justin Kirkland got hurt. So I'm not too keen on making too many adjustments as it stands right now, but he's certainly earned consideration for next season for me starting in training camp, seeing him in a more prominent role, seeing him on an elevated line in a more offensively skewed trio. But again, I'm not quite ready to do it yet outside of the power player, the odd shift to rotate through. If somebody isn't going, absolutely elevate him. But I think that's like from a full-time permanent type basis, or whether to see it could be a permanent full-time thing, I'm going to leave that till training camp next season.
Yeah, and honestly, so am I probably. Like it for me, we'll see what happens. Like if they have games that don't impact the playoff race towards the end of the year, then that's an opportunity to be able to do it. But I look at it more as a, you know, this training camp in September and into the start of the season, they experimented with Martin Pospisil playing as one of their top three centers. And they tried to use him on a line with Huberdeau, and you know, they continue to try to get Martin Pospisil to see if he can play a similar game to the way Sam Bennett has trended in Florida over the last number of years since getting there. And that was the idea. That was what Craig Conroy had told us in September. They tried it. It didn't work. And maybe they try it again. But I think another similar experiment you could try in training camp and be like, hey, we really want to give this some runway would be, hey, let's try Adam Klapka a little higher up the lineup through training camp and maybe see if that's something that we could start the regular season with. And I'd be really interested in that because, guys, we don't know what this roster is going to look like. We don't know what type of turnover we'll see during the offseason. Maybe there are some things that happen. And obviously there will be some free agents here and there that leave. And I think there's a really interesting thing to, at the very least, experiment with as early as training camp. I'm not making any juggles to the lines right now while they're still playing meaningful games. I'm not saying, hey, we're going to put Klapka up and place a player X or player Y. No, because generally the lines are working. And Wilson, to your point, in-game management, you can do that. There's an option that you can have. If you feel 43 is going and you feel like he's making an impact, you know, give him an extra shift or two and see if playing in more of an offensive role with more skilled players can exploit that a little bit more. But, you know, on a more permanent basis, I'd be waiting until next season too.
Yeah, so I chatted with Adam Klapka before that game against the Ducks. I thought it was a good time to talk to him for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think he's playing the best hockey of his life right now, at least at the NHL level. And number two, I think he had probably the second best game of his career against the Ducks back in January when he scored an absolutely gorgeous goal. And I believe he had 4 shots and 7 attempts and 8 hits. He was just really, really good in that game. So I thought I would talk to him before a game against the Ducks again. And I asked him about the comparison. So Ryan Huska, who's not one to just throw things out there for the heck of it, threw out the Alexei Protas comparison. And, you know, the more I've kind of dug into that, the better I think it could potentially be when it comes to Adam Klapka, because much like Alexei Protas, a little bit raw when the Flames acquired him, and it's been a bit of a slow burn, his development. But you saw the size, obviously, 6'8", 235. You saw the foot speed. Skates really well for a big guy. And there is skill there. We've certainly seen it at the AHL level, and now we're starting to see it more at the NHL level. And Alexei Protas was a bit of a slow burn too. He really didn't break through until this season. So he's a little shorter. He's 6'6". He's a little heavier. He's, I think, 243 or something like that. But when I asked Klapka about the Protas comparison, he said, yeah, he does see some similarities there. He thinks that Protas skates better than he does, but he thinks that he's more physical than Protas. I actually threw that at Mick yesterday, and Mick thought that Klapka actually skated better than Protas. So I guess it's something that we can dig a little deeper into. But it is a really interesting comparison because, you know, those two guys are rare in their combination of size and speed and skill. And, you know, the Flames, I think, took a bit of a flyer on Klapka, hoping that it would work out. And he's trending in the right direction, guys. I think he's finally getting to a point as an NHLer, and he's already been there as an AHLer, but as an NHLer, where he's figuring out how to use that unique package that he has of the size and the speed and the skill. And if he can be that guy more consistently, then I think for sure he's a top 9 guy next season. But I think that's the next step for Adam. He's just got to play that way consistently, and we're starting to see that.
It's the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. Game 76 Saturday night against the Vegas Golden Knights at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome for the Flames. And Vegas currently sits on top of the Pacific Division, but only a 3-point edge on Los Angeles. All of a sudden, that's become a little bit more tenuous. And Vegas has lost a couple of games consecutively coming into Saturday. But guys, where do the Golden Knights fit for you in this Stanley Cup contender conversation?
Yeah, and if you're the Kings, aren't you trying as hard as you possibly can to get into first place in the Pacific Division to avoid another first-round matchup against the Oilers? And they might be in a better position to win that series now than they ever have been before, especially if they get home ice because they've been great at Crypto.com Arena, but that might be a dogfight to the finish as well. But as far as the Golden Knights go, I definitely consider them a strong Stanley Cup contender. You know, they lead the division, and I think they're one of 3 or 4 teams that is well-positioned to come out of the conference. And I like their depth. I love them on defense. They've got, in my opinion, 3 elite defensemen in Shea Theodore, Noah Hanifin, and Alex Petrangelo. And up front, they've got one of the best players in the game in Jack Eichel, one of the most cerebral players in the game in Mark Stone. You know, Tomas Hertl's a heck of a player. And then they've got some younger guys who have really developed, and they've got a lot of depth. They can roll four lines and three pairings. They've obviously got excellent goaltending with Calgary's Aiden Hill. And I think they're really well coached. And they've been there and they've done that. And I do think that that experience matters. And here's something else that I think is a factor for them. I think T-Mobile Arena is one of the most difficult arenas to play in the National Hockey League. The momentum swings in that building are like unlike any other, I would say. You know, the way the Golden Knights can get the crowd into the game or vice versa, it's something to behold. So, you know, for me, they're one of three or four teams in the Western Conference that I would not be surprised to see playing in the Stanley Cup Final. And the Flames have had some success against them recently, which has been good to see because they certainly didn't have a lot of it early on against the Golden Knights. But they're perennially a Stanley Cup contender, and I would put them in that category again, guys.
I can't disagree with anything you said, Wilsey. I took the question from, or maybe I didn't. I take a different approach to this in who am I scared of the most if I had to play them in a playoff series? And to be perfectly honest, I think Vegas falls into the second tier cup contender category for me, where I'd have Dallas and Colorado and Florida in that upper tier. And then for me, Vegas would fall into that sort of secondary tier. It's tough to put them there because, as you said, one, their building is almost impossible to play in. They've only lost 9 games in regulation this season at home. Two, they've done it before. So for me, it's kind of difficult to put them in that secondary tier. But at the same time, I see teams in the NHL right now that I would probably be more fearful of playing, starting with Colorado, starting with Dallas, starting with Florida. Then you have Vegas in that second tier, perhaps. Like, even Washington to a degree, even though they've got 105 points on the season, I would probably lump them in that second tier as well. But it's hard to imagine going into T-Mobile and feeling good about your chances in a 7-game series when you've got a team that's recently won the Stanley Cup. You ran through the defense. They've got a goalie that's gone and done it before. They've got one of the best forwards in the game that's gone and done it before. I feel like I should be more threatened by them, but there are other teams that scare me more.
I think that I'm a little bit more where Wilsey is. Like, I think they're a sleeper deep run team. And sleeper's the wrong term to use, but
for a division leader, yeah.
I'm kind of like where you are, Wilsey. I just don't know if enough people are talking about them. People are buzzing about Dallas. They went out and got Rantanen, and obviously Colorado's made their all of their moves this year. And you know, Edmonton's got McDavid and Draisaitl, and they were in game 7 last year. And yet, and Winnipeg's having their incredible season. And yet, Jack Eichel is having the best season of his career, and he's the first ever Vegas Golden Knights player to hit 90 points. And this guy, you know, very much put a team on his back in a big way and helped him win a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago. So Eichel is not slowing down in any way, shape, or form. Mark Stone is made for the playoffs. Tomas Hertl will be returning for them and has had nothing but playoff success at times during his career. I don't know. I look at them. I like their blue line. I think their blue line is built for the playoffs. Their forward depth, especially in their top six, is the envy of most teams in the league. And their bottom six, just the way that bottom six plays, I think again is made for the playoffs. Their goaltending is fine. Like, is Aiden Hill the guy that I would put at the very top of my elite goaltenders list? No, probably not. But you know, he's won.
He's done it,
and he's fine. He's a good goalie. So. Yeah, I think Vegas is a sleeper cup contender. I really do. And whether or not they play that way on Saturday, I don't know. But when it really starts, like they're already clinched, and now they need to lock down number one in the Pacific Division. But once the games go from regular season to postseason, yeah, I think Vegas is a team to be reckoned with. I really do.
Yeah, as far as the Western Conference is concerned, for me, I've got them in a tier with the Stars. Now, if the Stars get Miro Heiskanen back, I might put them in a tier by themselves. With that said, if the Oilers get healthy, it's hard for me not to put them into that top tier as well, but they've got way more injuries that they're dealing with right now, including one to a guy named Connor McDavid. So they would definitely be in the second tier for me right now. I love the Avalanche. I think they're a way deeper team than they've been since they won the Stanley Cup. And I've got to put the Golden Knights in that group of teams as well. I think they've got as good a chance as anybody to get through the Western Conference. And I do think the fact that they've been there and done that and played in a couple of Stanley Cup finals and won one, that stuff matters. And the other thing I love about the Golden Knights, even though it's harder to get them in the playoffs, they have the best power play in the NHL. And you have to be good on special teams. They've struggled on the penalty kill, which is somewhat surprising. Last time I looked, I think they were 26th or 27th in the league, but the number one power play, and that could be the difference maker in a best-of-seven series.
Wilsey, I apologize because I'm not sure if you mentioned Winnipeg in that as well, but if you did, that's six teams from the, or five teams at least, from the Western Conference alone that we're talking about having a shot at the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, and they're at 108 points. They're tops in the NHL. That's five teams in the West alone we're talking about, which I think just speaks to the level of competition we're about to see later this month.
I didn't, and I should put them into the second tier. I just need to see it in the playoffs, guys.
Yep, that's
the last couple of playoffs have not been very good for Connor Hellebuck, who's their best player and might win the Hart Trophy this year. He is certainly the front runner for the Vezina, and I just need to see it from that team. I like them. They're deep, but I don't think that they have the type of superstars that some other Western Conference teams have. I would argue they're maybe deeper than those other teams outside of Dallas, but I just need to see it to believe it.
Yeah. All right, Wilsey, we'll see you at the Dome on Saturday morning. Thank you, sir.
Big game. Have a good weekend, everybody.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producer. And that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.